All right, turn with me, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, we'll look at verse 15. Father, I pray that you please bless the words that come forth and help us now, my God, to learn how to judge and judge in a way that pleases you. And we pray this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Apostle Paul said this. He said, "But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself is judged of no man." Why does it say that? Well, number one, if you belong to Jesus Christ, he's the one that'll judge you. Doesn't matter what anyone else thinks of you. Okay? It matters what he thinks of you. The whole world thinks well of you and he doesn't, you have a problem. Okay? The whole world thinks bad of you and he doesn't think bad of you, you're in a good place. Okay? But the point is, if God wants you to know how to judge. Now, people always have this thing, well, judge not that you be not judged. You know, Christians aren't supposed to judge. Well, how do you know if something's too salty? How do you know if it's sweet enough? How do you know if the light's red or green? You make judgments, okay? The point is, there's a proverb that says, "Thou shalt not have diverse weights in thy bag." What's that mean? You know, when you went into the market, I know when we go shop at Filipino markets and such, they'd literally have a scale there. And you'd say, "I want a pound of meat." They put a pound weight here, and then they put meat until they were eaten, okay? Well, what if you had a couple of different weights? You know, and you have one that's a little bit lighter, but it says a pound here, but you're cheating people. So thou shalt not have diverse weights in your bag. Well, that's the same thing with judgment. Don't you have diverse ways of judging people, okay? The same judgment that you use on others, you need to use on yourself. And that's the judgment you need to use. And sometimes that's humility. Romans chapter 2, it says, "Hey, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest, doest thou the same thing?" So David found out. Okay, he was asked to judge something and then found out thou art the man. You're the one doing it. Okay? You're blaming everybody else, but look at you. Now, I think everybody understands we're going through a national spectacle right now. And let me tell you one of the things that bothers me about this national spectacle. People have judged based on what party they belong to. Okay. When Clarence Thomas went up there, if you're a Republican, he wasn't guilty. If you're a Democrat, he was. When Bill Clinton got up there, if you were a Democrat, he wasn't guilty. If you're a Republican, he was. Okay. Now Judge Kavanaugh is up there, and if you're a Democrat, he's guilty. If you're a Republican, he's not. And that goes across the board. Okay. It's shameful to see people who blame Bill Clinton, now trying to exonerate Judge Kavanaugh, only on political basis. Okay? It's shameful to see people who excuse Bill Clinton blaming Judge Kavanaugh purely on a political basis. That's shameful. Okay? Now what I want to do is I want to go in here and show you how God judges these things. And you're going to have to use your best ability to try to adapt them to your own life, to your own judgment. I often talk about this guy, Spink Williamson, the old preacher that was old when I first married Ruth Ann. Very old then. I'll never forget, I had met him when I was still single. And then when I got married, I took Ruth Ann and said, "This is my wife." And he clutched his chest and he put his hand on it and said, "Lass, I'm so sorry I wasn't there for you." That was just Spink Williamson, you know. "I'm so sorry that you got yourself involved in this. I should have been there to help you," and such. But he talked about, he'd been a pastor for many years in what he called Fort Lickerdale, Florida. He started there when there was 40,000 people there in 1948. And the town built up around him. And he started Gold Coast Christian Schools. He had a huge tabernacle in the middle of the city and such. And it's fascinating because the huge knock against him was the debt that he got his church into. He would see, this is the way the city's going. He'd buy land for the church, build buildings. And when he retired, the church was $10 million in debt. You know he did it as retirement? He wrote a personal check for $10 million. He'd been investing himself all that time as a pastor. As he had the church investing, he was doing it himself, buying real estate and such. And the day he retired, he wrote a check for $10 million to the church and paid off that debt. And people had railed on him and carried on about him and everything else. And he left that church there in the middle of that city. Back, and again, he started it when it was a slow, sleepy town of 40,000 people. But he said this. He said that the worst thing that ever happened in his church, bar none, his wife was the only witness. And she ran to him in tears, telling him, so-and-so did this, I saw it. He grabbed her and said, did anyone else see it? She said, no, I was the only one to see it. He never told me what it was. He just said it's the worst thing that ever happened in his church. He did everything he could to try to find anyone else could corroborate what his wife said. And finally he told his wife, then God does not want us to judge him. If he did, he'd have given us a second witness. I don't care if you're my wife. This is the rules, okay? This is the rules. And he left it alone, okay? Now, that's a hard thing to do, a hard thing, but there's rules that God has on how you judge things. Now, let's go to Deuteronomy 22. Deuteronomy 22, and we'll go to verse 22. This is where the 22 gets its name from, Deuteronomy 22, 22. If a man be found lying with a woman married to a husband, and they both of them shall die, both the man that lay with the woman and the woman, so shalt thou put away evil from Israel. If you think about it, John chapter 9, what's going on there? They found a woman caught in the very act of adultery. Well, last I knew, that wasn't a solitary sport, okay? Last I knew, you know, it took two to tango. What'd they do? They only brought the woman. So right off the bat, Israel wasn't judging properly anymore. Mr. Caleb. Hello. I didn't know if he had a question there. But I raise kids, I understand that. But the thing is, right off the bat, there's a lot of things you see about when Jesus Christ came. For one thing, he told Israel, if you do these things, the diseases of Egypt will not be upon you. What happened when Jesus Christ came? The diseases of Egypt were everywhere. Okay? They weren't judging properly. Another thing is, if you think back to the book of Ezra, what was his big anger? And what was Nehemiah's big anger? Their children weren't speaking Hebrew. They were speaking the language of the people. When Jesus Christ got that girl to rise, what language did he have to speak in? Aramaic. Okay? They had reverted back. They were back in those times. Their people couldn't speak the language anymore. They're not judging properly. They've made a mess is what they've done. Okay? And of course, all the diseases of Egypt are upon them. But when God had them judging properly, he said, first of all, adultery, you died for it. Now, am I asking that we restore the death penalty for adultery in America today? No, I'm not asking that, okay? We are not a theocracy. What do you mean by that? A theocracy is where the laws of the state are specifically straight out of the Bible, okay? I am not advocating that we have a theocracy. But I am advocating that all law be based on Bible principle. Up until Oliver Wendell Holmes, all law in England and the United States was based on Bible principle. In fact, if you went in England and you could prove to a judge that an act of Parliament violated one of the laws of God, the judge declared it unconstitutional. You say England doesn't have a constitution. They had a verbal constitution. They had a constitution based on precedent and how things had always been. And they declared it unconstitutional. Blackburn, who wrote most of the law books for England and the United States. When you hear about men like Abraham Lincoln deciding to study law, they're reading Blackburn. That's who they're reading, and they're reading his books and such, and learning how to make judgments. And all these judgments were based on Bible principles. And what's interesting, again, you know, this is a theme that you're going to hear me make over and over and over again, but it comes down to this. There are nations who said, no, we want other principles by which we should judge other than Bible principles. Yes. Those nations turn into hell holes.
Yes.
People don't only tend to escape those nations, to get away from the poverty and the misery and the butchery that goes on there. The nations they escape to are nations that establish themselves on Bible principles.
Right.
Sweden and Denmark and Holland and New Zealand and Canada, the United States and England. That's where they go, okay? Nobody runs and tries to get to Zimbabwe, and nobody's running away trying to get to Poland or something. They're not trying to do that. Why? They want places built on Bible principle. Now, the history of the nations built on Bible principle is a history of evil men often making terrible mistakes, good men making terrible mistakes, sometimes evil men making good decisions. All of that's built together, all of it's there. What makes our nations different? Was there slavery in the United States? Yes, there was. You know, was there unfairness to women? Yes, there was. And all these things are there. But what makes us different as a people is we had the building blocks within our government to eradicate that stuff from within. Okay? Other governments never had that, so they just went on forever. You know, it'd be easy for me to pick any one of your lives out if I really knew you well, say as your parents and your family did or something, and to give a history of you that's hideous. Every mistake you've ever made. Every awful thing you ever said. And there's not a person here that we couldn't paint a terrible picture of you. If Mrs. Hain were an evil person, she could give a history of Pastor Hain that would make him look terrible, and she'd never have to lie. And vice versa. My wife could do the same with me. She'd never have to lie. She could just give an awful, evil portrait of me. Okay? And I could do the same vice versa. I've heard people do that in their families. Describe, well, this person, this and that. And it's a terrible thing. Okay? You know, it's one of those things that, that's what history's taught today. History's taught today by going back to every evil thing that ever went on and such and pointing it out, going through it. And I remember asking a girl one time, she was wanting to protest something about the Indians, and I said, why don't we take the land in New York that was stolen from the Indians and give it back to them? She said, I think we should. I said, we can't. Why? Because the Iroquois killed all the Erie and Algonquin. It was the Erie and Algonquin that were here first. Okay. The Iroquois came in the 15, the 1600s and just absolutely wiped them out.
Right.
Hideous tortures and vile things and burning whole families at the stake and everything else. We can't give it back. Okay. Does that mean everything we did to the Indians is right? That doesn't mean everything we did to the Indians is right. Okay. But name me another country where the indigenous people who live there have the rights that Indians do here. Go find one. Okay. Go find one where they can buy land and do whatever and vote and go where they want and build corporations and run for office. And again, I'm not saying that there's no prejudice left or anything of that, so I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to say our forefathers left us building blocks of how to judge on Bible principle. Now, let me give you an example how Bible principle works in law. And I've said this before. Some of you got it, some of you didn't. But, for example, it talks about if a man have an ox that is wont to push. In other words, you know, some ox can sit there, they're fine. Others are aggressive. You know, they're going to push a little bit. They got some horns in that. And it was testified to the man, your ox is wont to push. Okay? Your ox is apt to push people that come in there. The law now held him responsible for the behavior of that ox. He better keep it tied up. He better keep it behind, you know, either in the shed or behind fences or something. But if that ox kills a person, the law holds him guilty. You were told that ox was that way. We used to have a chow, a dog that escaped and somewhere, you know, came into our backyard. And of course, my kids fed it, said it wouldn't leave. And, you know, and such. Well, the problem with that chow is that when it came into our yard, it took a picture in its own mind of everything that was there, and no matter whatever came in after that, it was its enemy. Mm-hmm. How long your truck had brought it in? After 6 months, it still hated the truck. All right? It wasn't there that first day. Well, the thing is, it got loose one time and chased a toddler across the street up the stairs. Okay? And so I told my kids, if that dog ever gets loose again, we have to kill it. We cannot keep such a dog, okay? I'm not going to have a dog that I know will terrify toddlers and chase it upstairs. And you know what? It got loose again. It was gone. It's over. Why? Because I'd have been guilty. Who would have been guilty if that dog had bit that toddler up? I'd have been guilty. I knew that dog. Okay? I knew that, and I didn't take proper care of it. When it got loose again, that's all there was to it. Over, we're not keeping that dog. So the thing is, that was a principle in the law. So you go ahead and you buy some minivan somewhere and you're driving down the road and you get hit in the back at 30 miles an hour and you thought your child was safely strapped in the seat. The side door opens and your kid and the whole seat slides out. Well, you're, you know, spinning in the road. It was a terrible thing. The kid's going through everything. And then you find out that GM or Ford or Honda or whoever, they knew that would happen. They knew. You find the lawyers start subpoenaing, finding out the engineers figured that out. Ooh, that back seat comes out when it's hit at this angle at 30 miles an hour. Well, let's just hide that, okay? We're under pressure now. And that's a basis for lawsuits. That's why they go back and check that stuff. So whose fault is it now that kid slid out there? That wasn't supposed to happen. Not in a 30 mile an hour crash. So suddenly you sue that car manufacturer. Well, that's based on Moses' law. We built our laws based on those things. Built them where you judged according to those principles. Now, Deuteronomy 22, getting back to that again. Verse 23, if a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed unto a husband, and a man find her in the city and lie with her. Now, a lot of doctrine to this. Number one. A man and a woman are man and wife from the moment they're betrothed. Okay? Not of the marriage day. Well, for example, what did God tell Joseph? Joseph, be not afraid to take unto thee Mary thy what?
Wife.
Okay? Wife. Marriage is a covenant. It's a covenant. Adam took Eve, his wife, and became one flesh with her. Covenant was made, then they became one flesh. It's just one of the doctrines that's in the Word of God. But if a woman is betrothed to a man, okay, they've made that covenant, they haven't come together yet. And by the way, when it's John chapter 2, that Jewish marriage, in that Jewish marriage, there's a tent, there's a cot in that tent, and there's white linen sheets on that bed. And they go through that marriage ceremony, and that couple goes into that tent, and everybody's out there drinking wine and talking and such, and that marriage is being consummated. That's what the ceremony was. And it goes into that thing, and she better have the proof of her virginity and all that. That's what a marriage ceremony was in those days, okay? That's what it was. And almost all cultures in the world had that. What made the Jewish culture different is it gave you specific ways to judge. In India, for example, you know, you get all these people wanting to follow the yogi, blah, 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 the yogi this, I like yoga bear, all right? But the thing is, you had all these things there, they just, you know what a mother-in-law would do if she didn't happen to like her daughter-in-law? She'd burn her. Just take her out and burn her. I just read the life of William Wilberforce. And he was trying to force the East India Company to allow missionaries into India. Oh, they have their own culture. Why would you bring missionaries in there? You know what some of the testimony before Parliament was?
When a man died in India, his wife had to burn on the funeral pyre. No matter how old she was, they bound her up and put her on that fire like a log with her children sitting right there. Okay? And they were testifying before Parliament, men who watched this, and said it was like a party. Men are just standing around talking and joking and that. And they said the problem was it wasn't even a big fire. And she's just bound up, okay? And she's on there. Oh, we're sending missionaries to bring their culture. Okay? You go through the world today and find the places where English-speaking people went as missionaries today. You go find them. Those are the places in the third world that actually have hope.
Yeah,
actually, they do. Okay,
right.
And I'm not exonerating every single thing English-speaking people ever did. I'm just telling you they brought law, they brought Bible principle, they brought it to those places.
Right.
You know, General Armstrong was a man who fought in the American Civil War. What's interesting, he was a native of Hawaii. He was born in Hawaii. His parents went to Hawaii to be missionaries to the people. Now, if you read George Missioner's book, Hawaii, he mocks the missionaries. Okay? Oh, look at those missionaries, and they made the people wear clothes and all this. And he makes it a complete farce. You know what the Armstrongs did? They themselves realized that island is in the middle of the Pacific, and the Russians, the English, the French, and the Americans are going to fight for that. They're going to want it. And those people don't have a bit of hope. And the Armstrongs went there, and they convinced the king of Hawaii to allow them to set up a trade school. And along with their church, they taught men to be caulkers of ships, how to be wheelwrights, how to be coopers to make barrels. And they taught them to do how to fix sails. And when a French ship would come into Hawaii, they'd be stunned because these Hawaiians would go out there and actually be able to climb the mast and fix the sails and do all of that. You know what the United Nations called Hawaii? The only single place in the world where the native people were conquered by another race and who today have absolute equal political force on that island. It's the only place in the world where that's happened. No other single place. Why? Because one family went there as missionaries and said, we'll do this for these people. Okay? That's why Armstrong built, or he's the one that trained Booker T. Washington and trained him to be independent. Booker T. Washington then went and made Tuskegee Institute. Okay? Now, what is that? You take Bible principle and you teach it to other people. And then George Missioner, 100 years later, can write mocking little books about him and say, go ahead, George Missioner, let's see you go out and try to save an island. Mm-hmm. Let's see your ilk, what they've done for people. They haven't done anything for people, okay? Woe unto those colonies that the Belgians took over. Woe unto those colonies the Spanish took over. Woe unto those colonies the French took over. Woe unto those colonies that the Germans took over. If you look at the ones the English took over, it's a whole different ballgame. I read a testimony of an English soldier who they conquered an island the French had in the Pacific. And he said it was over 100 degrees every day. And they went in the main room where they did the cooking, there was a huge fireplace. And they had slaves chained right next to the fireplace so they couldn't get away from the heat, who had to keep putting the wood in all day long. Can you imagine that? Imagine your life. It's 100 degrees out. You're there with that flame. It's just there. And you're chained and you can never get away. Okay? Putting that in there and such. The misery of that. Parliament took testimony of the slave trade. And England's shame, they kept it far too long. And William Wilberforce, day after day, getting up and decrying it. Day after day, begging Parliament to get rid of it. And you know what they'd say? Well, there were people at war. Those are just prisoners of war. No, they weren't.
They just, it got to the point that on the western coast of Africa, gangs would just go into villages and drink people out, women and children. And they'd go there, and Wilberforce would actually show you the architectural drawings for a slave ship. And how that if you made everybody lay on their sides, you could pack them all together like this in that ship. And there'd be certain men who would come, there'd be no skin left on their shoulders and elbows because they'd be in that spot on the ship and such. And he actually showed times where if you had a slave that died on board the ship, insurance would pay for it. And there were captains who, if they thought that too many of their slaves weren't going to be healthy enough, would just throw them overboard for insurance reasons. And you know, in the West Indies, for example, one of the differences between the American South and the West Indies, the American South actually had to make laws over what you do with slave children. They didn't even live long enough to have children in the West Indies. They would just die that quickly, and they just replace them over and over and over again. They found captains of ships who would go and stick corks up the anuses of slaves to hide the fact they had diarrhea. Imagine the agony of that slave. The absolute agony standing there on that block. The men are like, oh, even that diarrhea will take him, and then find out later they were fooled and such. And again, the first country to ever outlaw that and get rid of it was England. Is it to their shame they ever had it? Yes, it's to their shame. Okay? But their Bible got rid of it. And you know what? 35 years later, our Bible got rid of it. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. And you can have teachers who will try to rub that in your face and look what we had. Well, go ahead. See how long it took these other countries to get rid of it. You can go to Ethiopia today and buy a slave. Mm-hmm. You can go to Somalia today and buy a slave. You can go to Chad today and buy a slave. Okay? You can go still buy slaves. Okay? They're not gone. They're not gotten rid of. But we had a nation that knew how to get rid of that stuff. Now, verse 23 again, Deuteronomy 22. If a damsel is a virgin, be betrothed unto a husband, a man find her in the city and lie with her, then you shall bring them both out of the gate of that city and shall stone them with stones that they die. The damsel, because she cried not, being in the city, and the man, because he hath humbled his neighbor's wife, so shall they put away evil from among you. In other words, if you're in a city and a man's raping you, what can you do? You can scream. Now, we're not talking about a city like New York City. Think of a city there where wall is joined to wall, and wall is joined to wall, and you hear your neighbors arguing, you hear their dog whining, you hear all that kind of stuff, you hear their children crying, and you hear all that kind of stuff. You know what a woman had the right and the ability to do? She could scream and she could yell, okay? And it's assumed she would. And if she cries later, rape, and you find out she didn't scream, she didn't yell, she's guilty, okay? She's guilty. She was in part of this thing. It's not rape at all. You know, David had a wife by the name of Michal. And when David went to escape from Saul, he made, it says, a bolster, and he hid and made it look like a lump in the bed, like he was really there, and Saul and them came in to take it. You know, Michal did, she lied. Well, he said he killed me. Okay? She lied. He said he killed me. Okay? And testified an evil thing against her husband. Like, and such. And Saul believed that, ended up giving her to another man and such. You know what? People will lie in those circumstances. They'll lie and say things that aren't so. It should have been a little testimony. Don't you think that she would have cried out or screamed or said something or run out of that course she would have? Now it says this, verse 25, but if a man find a betrothed damsel in the field, and the man force her and lie with her, then the man only that lay with her shall die. Why? Because you're out in the field. What if she cried? Who can hear her? Nobody can hear her, okay? Can't hear her. Well, then how do they catch the man? I saw an argument on the internet about this. How do they catch the man? Well, number one, keep your daughter's fingernails long, okay? You teach them every which way that they can fight and hurt every which way they can, all right? Their honor is worth it. Their honor is far worth it. And you know what? That man that's got the scratches all the way down his face, and that man that you walk out and point out there, and he can't explain how he got those scratches, and you got his skin underneath your fingernail, and there's people who saw him go out to that field there. You know what? There's something to that. Do you ever wonder why
Joseph is betrothed to a woman. And he finds out she's pregnant. And he's under the law. What's the verdict for her? Death. With one exception. And it says he, being a just man, sought to put her away privily. How could a just man put her away privily? She's a field worker. It's the only way. Okay? If she's a country girl, she's out there in the fields, she's justly put her away privily. If she was a city girl, she couldn't have been justly put away privily. Couldn't have happened. Okay? So you learn something there about Mary, that she's a field worker. She's somebody who goes out there in the fields and such. Now let me tell you something. I don't get off involved in politics, but let me say something that bothers me. Again, it bothers me that people have divided politically over who's right. That is not how you judge. Okay? You don't judge, well, my wife said so, I'm going to believe it. No, if your wife and another witness says something, then you believe it. Right now we have a problem. There's only two people, he said, she said. What about a polygraph? Why did you don't think God could have given them away to, you know, a priest to feel the pulse? Somebody else feel the heartbeat and ask questions? It's all a polygraph's doing. Why didn't God set that up? Because polygraphs can lie. If I took a polygraph test 22 times, I'll bet you on the 23rd time I could say anything I wanted and get away with it. I've done it over and over and over again like an actor. I can take that polygraph test and pass it perfectly. Well, he took a polygraph test. Okay? Doesn't mean anything. It's not allowed in the court of law. Okay? It's not allowed to happen. You know, in the United States, we have the Food and Drug Administration, and you can't take a drug unless they pass it, okay? It's probably a huge mistake. It probably caused more havoc than without it. But regardless of that, it has to pass certain things. Do you realize for an antidepressant to pass and be sold on the market, and some of you men sold many of these antidepressants, it has to beat a placebo in a controlled test. It has to beat a placebo by 2 Hamilton points. 2 times in a controlled test. Meaning, a bunch of people, 100 getting a placebo, 100 getting the real antidepressant. You take all of their scores of depression and you study those scores. And when the whole study is over, the placebo and the control group over here that had taken this. The people in the control group had to have improved their depression as it's rated on a Hamilton scale by 2 points. More than the placebo did. Number one, all placebos bring down depression. What? Because what do you need for depression? You need to go get help. So you go get help, they give you a placebo. Oh, I'm getting help, okay? Brings it down. Well, you know what Irvin Kirsch found out? That the drug companies test those drugs over and over and over and over and over and over again, and finally they beat the placebo twice and they put it on the market. Many times the placebo beats the antidepressant, but there's no limit to how many times you can test it. And when he went to Freedom of Information, he found out those drugs the doctors are giving you have been tested over and over and over and over and over. And they couldn't beat that placebo. But finally, boy, we got one last year. And after the 67th try, we got it to do it again. And that's all the law requires. Well, why not do that with a polygraph? Why not test a person over and over and over again with a polygraph, and when they finally pass it, swear they pass the polygraph. That's why the courts of law don't allow polygraphs in. Okay? Now, let me tell you something. If someone comes up to you and they tell you they've been sexually assaulted, number one, believe that person. They need you to do that. They need you to believe that. You'd be amazed how many people have suffered one way or another under some kind of, sometimes it's just horrible verbal assault. Sometimes it's a coercion in a thing they just didn't know how to get out of. Sometimes it's actually violent rape. That's the most rare. Okay? But believe that person. But whether, and they need that, offer to help them. But whether or not you prosecute the person that does it, it has to have the rules of evidence. Whether or not you prosecute that person. I have stood in open court and had someone point at me and say, this man sexually abused me. In open court. Fortunately for me, I wasn't living in the country. Didn't know the people. Had never been in the state they were in. It was a complete and utter lie, okay? By someone who I think could have passed a polygraph test. At so absolutely sure, okay? And when we stepped out of court, I had to show my friends I wasn't even living in this country. I didn't even meet this family till this girl's 17. And you know, and she's saying at 13 years old, I had done these things to her. And I could prove it. But you know what? Most of the people in that court, I didn't have a chance to go tell them that quietly. Most of the people in that court just stood there and said, whoa, look what that man is. Look what he is, okay? And yet I'm still a person that says when someone comes up and tells you they've been sexually assaulted, be kind to that person and believe them and begin to help them. But at the same time, use rules of evidence. You can't say, well, my heart's for this person, so I'm going to go with this, okay? That's what I'm going to do here. Dr. Ford really went through what she went through. And she really did write to her senator 3 months ago. The most cruel thing that could have ever been done to that woman is not to have used rules of evidence and brought it up early in the investigation stage when it could have been looked at and investigated. To wait and to trot her out after all investigations are done where she is a spectacle. And if indeed this happened to her, and she really is the great survivor, is an abuse of that woman. Okay? That is an abuse of her. You're putting it out, and what have you done? You've taught young girls that powerful men can get away with this, that preppies can get away. You've taught the world that. Okay? That's what you've done. And that's her friends doing that to her, if indeed that's the case. That's people say, we're on your side. Okay? Doing that. You yourself. Whether or not you determine Judge Kavanaugh did that, or whether you determine that that girl is lying, first of all, I don't think you'll ever have the evidence one way or another, okay? Therefore, the rest of your life, you won't know, did that woman lie, or did that judge lie? You are probably never going to have the ability to find out. But I don't want to hear you saying, well, I'm a conservative Republican, therefore I think she's lying. Okay? I don't ever want to hear that. If indeed that happened to her, she made a number of mistakes. Number one, if you ever put yourself in a situation like that. And by the way, almost all you ladies know somebody that's had something like that happen to them. Almost all you ladies know somebody that's gone through that. You know what they always do? They tell their best friend. They do. That's who they tell. They tell their best friend. They tell them about it. Best friends keep it secret. I've known girls keep horrible secrets that never should have been kept. Should have been prosecuted to the fullest. They just didn't understand how. They didn't know how to do that. Okay? And that's why you should always ask your children, always tell them and reassure them that they can come and tell you anything. They always need to have that reassurance. And if somebody's bullying you and somebody's making you afraid, somebody's making you keep secrets, and somebody's, you know, blackmailing you or whatever else, you can come to me. I will believe you. I will protect you, okay? And I will not blame you. Boy, and every kid needs to hear that over and over and over again. And they need to be told that over and over again. And then when those children do come to you, you need to go to the utmost length to see to it that whatever the laws of this, whatever state you're in, that person who did that is taken care of and put under the pressure. And most of the time, the sad part is, most will get away with it.
I have helped prosecute far more than one case of that. I have zero tolerance for it. Okay? That's 911 when I hear about it. That's all there is to it. I've had people beg me, well, this is a church situation. Sorry, Charlie, only the best tasting tuna gets to restart this, for those of you who remember. Well, but it's just, we're gonna handle it this way. Here's what I want you to understand. God gave you a way to judge things. Judge from within those principles. And if you can't know if something's true or false, leave it alone. Okay? If you can know if it's true or false, then don't be afraid to judge it. Okay? Don't be afraid to do that. But when you see these kind of spectacles going out there and people being dragged through the mud and such, A, the rule of law was not kept. It was not kept. Okay? The times of evidence were not kept. None of that. It was all done to make a huge, spectacular thing, which has nothing to do with whether or not it's the truth. Nothing. Okay? It's just a shame, because if she really is a victim, okay, she's been dragged through the mud by her own party. Dragged through the mud by those who could have quietly vetoed that man early in the process, vetted it, and then realized, we don't want to bring this man out, okay? We don't want this guy to be the guy. Could have been done. But for political reasons, the tragedy of her life was brought out and put on the public stage, where half of America is going to call her a liar. And the other half of America is going to call a man a liar. And that has served no one well. You are Christians, you learn to judge all things. And you learn to judge it by the way God judges it, not by the way men do. Pastor Haynes?
There ought to be a song for that.